You're listening to This Week in Fantasy Baseball. Hello, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Fantasy Baseball. I'm John Cook, joined by my co-host Patrick Fitzgerald. In this episode, we're going to go over the latest news and notes around baseball, recap the hitter and pitcher performances from this past week, and of course, give some streamer recommendations at the end of the show. But before we get into all of that, how are you doing, Patrick?
Hey, John, I'm doing pretty well. It's been a busy week around here. Baseball-wise, I'm glad that the Orioles swept the Padres, but I'm not glad that I was starting Nestor Cortez in one of my playoff matchups for that. But he's far from the only pitcher who's gotten blown up this week. It's been a lot of landmines out there. So, yeah, hopefully you guys are tiptoeing around them pretty well. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. I finished my home league with two straight losses, ended up finishing in fourth. So never loved that. But I was kind of hit by a lot of those just random blowups that you kind of discussed. I feel like a lot of pitchers are just getting wrecked right now in late August, early September. It feels like it's not even uncommon right now to just kind of look at how your pitcher is doing. And it's like, oh, 700 runs in four innings. All right, cool. Good to know that's how the ERA is going this week. So, yeah, that's kind of tough, but, still trying to, you know, make some moves in the fantasy leagues that I'm still involved in right now and just trying to, maintain my head above water and survive till the end, I guess.
Yeah. I had Cortez in that league, but my opponent had Shane Bieber, Yuri Perez, and George Kirby all going yesterday. So the ratios are, they're wide open right now, to say the least. I got Ryan Pepiot pitching right now, and if he throws a few scoreless innings, my whip will probably go from like 2 to 1.5 just because of how bad it's looking right now. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it finishes up.
Yeah, I've been pretty out on checking just checking scores pretty regularly just because once my home league is done, it's like I do care about the other fantasy leagues I'm in, but I don't like care that much. Mm-hmm. I was looking at one of my matchups today. The ERA was like 7-5. It was like, oh, it's that kind of week. Okay, great.
Yeah, exactly.
In terms of real baseball, the Twins are awful. I kind of made a small observation that right now we're playing the White Sox. And we've so far have lost 2 out of 3 games, and we're playing them again today on Thursday. I think the Twins might be worse than the White Sox next season. I don't see any. I mean, like, the pitching could be good next year if everyone's healthy, but I don't know. There's somehow more hope for the White Sox and all their young players than the hope I have for the Twins right now.
Yeah, that's a tough thing to say, but I get where you're coming from.
Yeah, it's a little rough, but you know, that's why we have fantasy baseball, to take our minds off real baseball, I guess. Anyways, before we get into the rest of the episode, just a reminder, you can follow our podcast on Twitter at ThisWeekPL. You can send us your fantasy baseball questions to our email at thisweekplpod@gmail.com. Lastly, make sure you subscribe to or follow the podcast on whatever streaming platform you listen to. We're on all of them, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube. Wherever you listen, make sure you follow us and leave a 5-star review if you enjoy the show. All right, we're going to get into injury news. A couple big names on this list, both returning and going on the injury list. And we're going to start with Seth Lugo of the Kansas City Royals. He is going on the injury list with a lower back strain. Initially, they were just going to delay his start, but it turns out, nope, they're going to put him on the injury list. Kansas City already was was a long shot for the playoffs, but this kind of feels like one of their moves where they're basically choosing to not really compete as much for that final wild card spot. One of the teams that is in the wild card is Boston. They just kind of dealt with a big blow here with Roman Anthony, their star rookie outfielder, now going on the injury list with a left oblique strain. 4 to 6 weeks, I think, is what I've seen for his recovery time. So I would not expect him to return anytime this regular season, but Boston, I'm sure, is hoping that he will be good in time for the playoffs, assuming they are able to get that far. Spencer Arrighetti of the Astros, right after having a pretty decent start, goes on the injury list with right elbow inflammation. Hate to see that for a pitcher. Shelby Miller of the Brewers cannot escape the curse of being an Arizona reliever. He is now on the injury list with a right elbow UCL sprain. Hopefully that's just it and it's not worst, but the Brewers did transfer him to the 60-day IL, effectively ending his season, even if the Brewers make a deep run into the playoffs. Lourdes Gurriel Jr. of the Diamondbacks, unfortunately, he suffered a right ACL tear, so he is going to be out for quite a while, probably not back at all next season. May make an appearance in 2027, assuming he's still on a team then. Edward Cabrera of the Marlins, he's dealing with a right elbow sprain, going on the injury list there. I would be surprised if the Marlins do bring him back in time for the end of the season, but elbow sprains might be only a couple weeks of an injury. Jonathan India going on the injury list with a left wrist sprain. Again, very similar to the Seth Lugo situation, where don't think Kansas City is looking to compete too much, so it might be a while before he's back. And finally, Jordan Hicks of the Red Sox going on the injury list with a shoulder injury. He already wasn't very good this year for the Red Sox, so this isn't really going to impact too much, both in real life and in fantasy.
Yeah, Roman Anthony, I think that's kind of the biggest takeaway here. Super unfortunate. He was, you know, just off to a great start as a young rookie, not even, you know, just a regular rookie, but super highly touted prospect, super young guy, and he was doing great. Probably a little better in real life than fantasy, but that's really unfortunate. Seth Lugo going down is a tough one too. Maybe that was the injury was kind of behind some of his struggles recently, at least hopefully. And yeah, Edward Cabrera got that kind of breakout season, you know, interrupted with a month to go by an injury. So you just got to hope that he's 100% for next year. I'm sure that he's going to be pretty coveted in drafts next year, even despite this injury.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the risk with him is just that, you know, it's not that he's necessarily injury prone, but just the way he throws the ball, right, the insane changeups that he's chucking, right, it's just going to naturally lead to, you know, more pain probably for him. So want to definitely monitor that that elbow sprain, and hopefully it doesn't turn into anything worse for him as in the offseason.
Yeah, I mean, the 128 innings he's at this year so far is a career high, so he's definitely a durability concern.
Yeah. All right. Moving on to some happier news. We're going to talk about some injury list returns, starting off with Tyler Wells of the Orioles. He came back, I believe, Wednesday, 5 innings, 5 hits, 2 runs, 4 strikeouts and 0 walks. Pretty solid start there. Luis Garcia of the Astros came back Tuesday, I believe, 6 innings, 3 hits, 3 runs, 6 strikeouts and no walks. And Luis Severino of the Athletics also on Tuesday, 5 innings, 3 hits, no earned runs, 4 strikeouts, and 1 walk. So some pretty solid outings there from these guys returning from the injury list. Jack Aglianone of the Kansas City Royals, he DH'd on Wednesday after coming off the injury list. He's basically splitting time. He actually just pretty much is DHing for that team. So there really isn't any sort of timeshare there. Michael Kepich of the Dodgers, he pitched on Tuesday, but he's unlikely to be a high leverage guy for now with his return from the injury list. Similarly, Ryan Yarbrough of the Yankees, he returned from the injury list earlier this week. He has yet to pitch in a game, but he's also very much a low leverage guy right now for the Yankees. Although you might ask the Yankees, they could just take all the high leverage relievers they can get because it doesn't seem like any of them are sticking. Joey Ortiz of the Brewers, he has batted ninth and played shortstop every game so far. He's been back, I believe, since Monday. Jorge Mateo of the Orioles, he has yet to appear in a game, coming back from the injury list, so not really anything valuable for fantasy there. Jake Berger of the Rangers, he came back from the injury list, but he's currently splitting time with Rowdy Tellez. He did bat fourth on Wednesday, but he is unlikely to have any sort of consistent starts for that Rangers team. He did have a teammate return. Chris Martin got the win on Monday. He's kind of a long shot for saves. Might get some holds, but also that Texas bullpen is a little bit in flux anyway. So if you're looking for a speculative pickup for the end of the season, maybe Chris Martin's one of those guys. Jackson Merrill of the Padres came back from the injury list. He's started in center the last 2 games, batting sixth. And Hyesung Kim of the Dodgers, he started at second on Thursday, batting seventh, but there's not much value there right now. The only maybe interesting thing is that the Dodgers have said that Tommy Edman, who is currently on a rehab assignment, is going to focus on playing center. So maybe that opens up more time for Kim to play at second for the remainder of the season, but also remains to be seen how they end up splitting time between him, Enrique Hernandez, and just a bunch of other random infielders or, you know, players that the Dodgers have.
Yeah, they did just send down Alex Freeland, I believe, today. So that should clear up at least some playing time for Kim. So, you know, you'd hope he'd at least get in the lineup against most righties at this point, at least until Edwin returns. And then, yeah, Cags, I figured, you know, they took their time with him on the rehab assignment, but I figured he'd get pretty regular run once he got called back up. And I think he's only started 1 out of 3 games, so I'm not quite sure what's going on there. I figured he'd at least start against all the righties, but that hasn't been the case so far. And then, yeah, it's nice to see a couple arms coming back from major injuries, and then Severino coming back from a shorter-term injury, you know, might have some streaming intrigue, these three guys down the stretch here.
Yeah, I guess for Kags, the weird thing for him is, like, you know, where is the playing time coming from? Because, obviously, Vinny P's got first base pretty much locked down. Salvi will occasionally DH here and there. They weirdly used Randall Grichuk and Carter Jensen as DHs in the last two DHs in two of the last three games as well. So I don't, it feels like Kags should be the full-time DH right now for that team, but the fact that they've, you know, used two other guys has been kind of interesting. Although I know Carter Jensen's got a little bit of interesting prospect pedigree with his makeup.
Right, and I guess they added Mike Yastrzemski at the trade deadline. Maybe that, you know, clouds things a little bit in the outfield, but then Jonathan India got hurt, so you figure that there would be enough spots. But I don't know, I guess maybe they're just trying to give some other guys some opportunities. And you know, Kags was really bad, right, in the majors, and his first shot at it, so maybe they're just trying to ease him in a little bit more.
Yeah. All right, well, moving on to some other just injury updates. Starting with Pablo Lopez, he is likely to return from his shoulder injury this weekend after pretty much being out for the entire summer. Ryan Weathers of the Marlins, he's making his last rehab start today on Thursday, so expect him to be back next week. Jake Myers of the Astros, he is likely to return from the injury list this weekend. Austin Riley of Atlanta, officially transferred to the 60-day IL, he is basically done for the season. Anthony Santander of the Blue Jays, he is nearing a return, should be going on a minor league rehab assignment soon. Roki Sasaki of the Dodgers, he is not expected to return to the majors this year. I think we are pretty much convinced of that, but Dave Roberts officially said that he is not coming back this season. Cal Venegan of the Tigers, currently day-to-day, he suffered an injury yesterday while warming up in the bullpen. Right now there isn't any further news on his what's going on with him, but he and Will Vest have been kind of shuffling back and forth on who's, you know, getting safe opportunities, and obviously it'd be a big blow to fantasy teams and also the Tigers if Finnegan looks to be out for an extended period of time. Jordan Westberg of the Orioles, he is starting a rehab assignment soon. Adolis Garcia of the Rangers, he's missed three straight games, currently day-to-day. Cole Reagans of the Royals, he's facing live batters, but it still could be a while before he returns. Still would probably need to go through a couple of rehab assignments. And also with the AAA season winding down, I'm kind of curious how the Royals are going to approach this, and if they just end up shutting him down for the rest of the season if they don't think it's worth having him pitch in, let's just say, the last week of the season. And then Michael Soroka of the Cubs, he faced hitters in a 34-pitch live batting practice session. For him, obviously the Cubs are in the thick of the playoff race, so while the Cubs are probably not racing to bring him back, they still could definitely use him in the playoffs. So I would be expected to see him probably make a regular season appearance probably by the end of the season. But just another sort of thing to keep your eye on, as you know, some of these teams are shutting players down because they have no more postseason hopes, while other ones are kind of just wrapping up their rehab assignments because they need these guys back before October.
Yeah, there's some pretty big, some pretty potentially impactful returns coming up here. Pablo Lopez, definitely a premium IL stash. I would expect he's owned pretty much everywhere, but if he's not, go get him. Ryan Weathers probably a cut below that, but I think that he's a solid pitcher as well. And at this point, you know, starts and volume make a huge deal in your playoff matchups especially, so worth seeing if he's out there. And then, yeah, save shakeup could be big in Detroit with Finnegan day-to-day. Vest could get some more opportunities. And then, yeah, Reagans and Soroka, I think, unfortunately, we can write them off for the most part for fantasy purposes. They've definitely been taking their time with Reagans, which I can understand. You know, they have low playoff odds at this point. He's the ace of the staff. So, you know, you sort of understand that. But it did seem like he was going to be back in September, you know, when he first went down. But shoulder injuries can be tough sometimes in terms of the progress, so I guess it's not too surprising.
Yeah, it feels like we've been waiting on a Reagans return for like the last month, yeah. Or just like Reagans news, and hearing that he hasn't even started, you know, facing live batters, or really he hasn't, you know, started making his way toward a rehab assignment. That's kind of interesting to note in terms of his return. Mm-hmm. In some other news, Brandon Sproat of the Mets, he's finally getting his call-up, which means the Mets have finally exhausted all their star AAA starters, calling up Nolan McLean and Jonah Tong, and now Brandon Sproat will join the rotation because, let's be honest, that rotation is rough right now with Sean Manaea and Kodai Senga just unfortunately unable to pitch very well. And then Ha-Seong Kim, he was waived by the Rays, and Atlanta picked him up. And I don't really know how much fantasy value there is there, but he's probably going to play every day for that team. And so just maybe a little bit better for him to be in Atlanta than it is in Tampa Bay. But both teams not really doing much in terms of, making a push for the playoffs. So it remains to be seen whether that change in senior is actually going to be good for Kim or not.
Yeah, I think he's worth keeping an eye on if you're a team that's desperate for speed. That's really his calling card. And Atlanta has had a black hole at shortstop all year, so he's going to be in the lineup every day. And Sproat, yeah, that's good to see. I'm not as excited about him as maybe I was about McLean and Tong, but it seems like he's going to replace Senga, or maybe they're going to skip Senga's turn. They haven't announced anything yet, but that seems to be the way it's trending. So I guess just keep an eye on, you know, the shakeup and the scheduled starts, because it seems like they might be going with the six-man rotation. And Tyler McGill, I think, is about to return too. So it's really, maybe they're just going to do a couple piggybacks, you know, like four inning stints or something, but it'll be interesting to see how they deploy everybody.
Yeah. And this is actually kind of a big move because, Sproat, I believe, wasn't on their 40-man roster. So they actually had to select his contract. So this is a concerted, you know, move by the Mets to basically make sure that they can still compete down the stretch of September and don't lose out on that last wild card spot to, I believe the Reds are just the team that's right behind them. So, they're clearly wanting to compete and make sure they can make a run in October. So, you know, if the rookies are the ones that can, you know, get them going there, then that's going to be what it is.
Yeah, I don't think any of the three guys were 40-man eligible or need to be on the 40-man this offseason for the Rule 5. So it's cool to see them just going for it, you know, not treating every 40-man spot like, you know, gold like a lot of teams do, which can't blame them, but it's fun to see some teams going against the grain.
All right, that is it for the injury update. We are going to move into player performances starting on Friday, August 29th. Who we got?
Yeah, so speaking of the Mets, on the 29th, I'm going to talk about Brandon Nimmo. Justin Havelock was on our hitter recap with Cruz Liner for Dylan Cruz, who's had a couple of decent games since coming off the IL. But Nimmo has had a really great season, so I wanted to highlight him here. Great day for him, 3-for-4, 2 home runs, 4 runs, 4 RBIs, and a walk. Led the Mets in a 19-9 rout of the Marlins with a pair of homers. And this came off of Yuri Perez, who we're actually going to talk about in just a second. 103-mile-per-hour home run in the first and 107-mile-per-hour shot in the sixth. 2025 has been arguably the best year of Nimmo's career. He's on pace to set new highs in home runs, stolen bases, and RBIs. And as long as he's hitting in the middle of this really strong Mets order, he's kind of a staple and, you know, an anchor on a lot of people's rosters. And Nimmo, I think, is kind of a player who's a little bit consistently undervalued, but he's putting together a great campaign that might kind of put an end to that in years, you know, in future drafts. And I'm kind of thinking of him as like what Brian Reynolds was coming into this year, right? He's a guy who contributes in every single category. He might not stand out in any one category, but he'll you know, do it for you across the board, all while kind of going right towards the back end of the top 100 as an outfielder too. So do you share the enthusiasm on Nimmo, or do you think maybe he's just spiking a little bit of a career year?
I agree. I agree with that characterization that he's just kind of a guy who helps everywhere, right? Like he's not exceptional at anything. The one thing that maybe feels real is the fact that the average is actually still at 267. It's kind of lower than what his peak had been a couple years back, batted 292 in 2021. The one thing that's probably just going to be the knock against him is that he's going into his age 33 season next year, right? Like he's not getting any younger. The fact that he's actually accumulated so many stolen bases the last two seasons is kind of impressive. Being, you know, on the wrong side of 30, so to speak. I still think that it still makes sense for him to go in the top 100, though, you know, as an outfielder too. I don't think we'd expect to see any true regression in skills. And it's not like his performance this year is actually markedly different than last year. I think the biggest difference is actually that the average has gone up. But that's not a weird thing because he's actually regressing to his career averages. So, I think he should still be totally targeted in drafts next season as a pretty decent outfielder too. Wouldn't expect more from him, but the fact that he helps in every single category is huge. And I think that's what makes him valuable.
Yeah, I think he's a super well-rounded player. The 224 average last year was definitely an aberration. Like career low BABIP, we know that he's more of a 260 guy. So it's nice to see him bounce back like that. It's interesting because I was going to say, like, in OBP leagues, he gets an even bigger boost, but 334 OBP this year is just good, not great. He's actually being a lot more aggressive this year, and maybe that's what's allowing him to, you know, tap into more power. It seems like he's probably swinging a little bit more. Yeah, swinging a little bit more in the zone, like, you know, right around a career high zone swing rate. So kind of changing his approach, which is impressive to see, you know, this late in his career. But I get what you're saying about the age. It can be difficult to figure out, you know, when is it time to kind of jump off the ship of an aging player.
Yeah. I mean, the thing with him, though, is like he's not hitting, you know, massive number of home runs. He's not, you know, doing crazy things on the stolen bases. Like, he's playing like a guy that you'd probably expect a pretty decent, you know, like early 30s baseball player to be, yeah, like, you know, 20-ish homers, you know, 10 to 15 stolen bases, really good counting stats because he's on a good, well, the Mets, people who have Soto on their team would probably argue maybe not the greatest team in terms of having runners in scoring position, but he's got, you know, decent counting stats as well. So, yeah, none of that seems to scream that, like, being a year older, that number is just going to really drop off.
Yeah, I mean, assuming that Pete Alonso returns, the floor of an offense with Nimmo, Alonso, Soto, and Lindor is pretty high. So on the pitching side, like I said, Eury Pérez, who we're going to talk about, he's on the Marlins, obviously. He was at the Mets in this one, victimized by Brandon Nimmo, among others. It was a tough one. Didn't make it out of the first inning. Two-thirds of an inning, 5 earned runs, 3 hits, 2 walks, and no strikeouts. 3 whiffs, 26% CSW on 39 pitches. Perez was, they just kind of jumped all over him in the first inning, bamboozled for 2 home runs and 5 runs. And the Marlins just, you know, they just decided to protect him. Obviously, they're out of it, so they pulled him after. Took him a really long time to record 2 outs. Nick said, you know, keep running Yuri out there and hopefully it doesn't hurt your chances too much. But then yesterday, we saw another really tough outing. He made it a little deeper in the game, but he gave up even more runs, and it was against the Nationals, which is, you know, not a strong offense at all. I think Nick is still relatively optimistic, if I'm remembering what he wrote in the SP Roundup for yesterday's start. But as a manager, you know, these are big starts if you're playing in a head-to-head league, so I'm sure you got to be super frustrated with Perez. So is he kind of a drop bench consideration for you at this point, or do you just kind of trust the talent here?
I feel like you have to trust the talent, but, I mean, that being said, it hasn't necessarily been a lights-out season for him either, right? It's a 4.66 ERA. The strikeout rate's not that great at 23.5%. The walk rate's definitely not good, 9.1% there. Perez is for sure someone who you're keeping on your roster because of the pedigree, not because of how the season has been going, right? He still has, you know, really good, you know, whiff rates, and CSW is, like, actually not that great at 27%. So if you want to drop Perez, considering that he just kind of whiffed against a poor offense like the Nationals, I think it wouldn't be a bad decision, I guess, to do so. You know, at the same time, like, I could totally see holding him because, I mean, looking at his next matchups, it's Nationals again, which, you know, hopefully we'll see how that one goes. But then he gets the Tigers and then he gets the Rangers. So actually, I don't think he gets the Tigers based on how the schedule works out. So maybe it's just it's Nationals and then Rangers. Those could be good starts, but if you have better options, I would not find it a weird decision to drop Yuri.
Yeah, I think if you're, like, in a matchup where you have a volume advantage or something like that, you could sit him. But if it's pretty tight, I think the ceiling is high enough that you can run him out there. Obviously, it's going to be nerve-wracking, right? Running a guy out after he's given up, what, 13, 12 earned runs after his, you know, over his last 2 starts. It's going to be scary, but I do think that, yeah, you trust the talent to some extent. I think maybe, like, 10-teamer, right, once you get super shallow, I'm okay with the drop, but, you know, most of our leagues, kind of 12-team context, I think I'd still start him. I don't have him anywhere, right, so I'm not the one in the arena making the decision, but, I mean, I would be happy to have him on my team even despite these struggles.
Yeah, he does get Detroit next at home in Miami. So, not next, I should say, after this next national okay. start. So, it is technically a 2-week start next week. I think if you're in weekly league, you probably keep him on your roster. Yeah. You probably start him there. But it's probably not a very comfortable sort of feeling.
Don't watch that start.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Do whatever you can do to just reverse jinx that. Yeah. All right, moving on to Saturday, thanks to Kevin O'Brien for the Diaz of Thunder. Hit a recap article talking about Elias Diaz, who's been pretty nice for the Padres at the catcher position. But we were talking about Jeremiah Jackson of the Orioles, who I frankly had no idea existed. I'm sure you probably knew who he was, but no idea who this guy was. And apparently he's been having a really good run so far in the majors the past couple weeks. 2-for-5 with a double, a homer, 2 runs and 4 RBI. For the Orioles on Saturday. The Orioles beat up on the Giants 11-1, and Jackson was a big part of that game, obviously with 4 RBI. In his rookie debut, he's hitting .321 with an .870 OPS and 106 plate appearances. His strikeout to walk rate's not that great. I believe the walk rate's like kind of around 3.5%, strikeout rate's kind of in the mid-20s. But again, like that's kind of standard for a rookie. I wouldn't expect, you know, crazy elite numbers for him. He's got a good barrel rate, 8.9%. He hits the ball pretty consistently hard as well with a 34% hard contact rate. So really good metrics there. He is consistently batting second in the Orioles lineup right now, which, you know, obviously means more plate appearances. Also means that the team, you know, trusts him in that spot. Doesn't look to be moving from that spot anytime soon as well. He's probably unlikely to make any major impact in fantasy for the rest of the season, but looking towards next year, is this a guy who might be worth monitoring in drafts as, you know, a late round outfielder or maybe like a guy to fill a util spot?
I mean, maybe in AL only leagues. I think once the Orioles get healthy, obviously it remains to be seen what they do in the offseason, but once they get healthy, I think Jackson's going to be out of an everyday role. I do think that this good stretch has earned him a decent chance at a roster spot, which is a big deal. I mean, this is a cool story. He was released as a minor league free agent. He'd never been above double A coming into this year. And then the Orioles signed him. I didn't even know who he was 2 months ago until like 2 months ago. And I follow the Orioles and their system, you know, as close as anyone really. So I'm sure non-Orioles fans out there have no idea, which can't blame you. So he just kind of, he was decent in double A and they promoted him to triple A and he just kind of ripped his way through it. Super swing happy approach, which was consistent across all the levels he's been at this year. So it seems like major league pitchers are starting to exploit that a little bit with the bad strikeout to walk numbers, like you're saying. I would expect it to continue. But I think honestly, I'd be more interested in him the rest of this season than next year, just because the playing time's there right now, the lineup spot is there, and he's on a heater, right? I you know, always question how much we should buy into heaters with hitters, but I think at this point in the season, it's okay to just, you know, kind of speculate on guys because it's such a small, you know, remaining sample. So if he, you know, has a full week coming up or a couple of soft pitchers, I think he's a decent guy to turn to. But in terms of long-term viability, I don't quite see it.
Yeah, I mean, the reality is he's in this spot because of all the injuries, right, that are occurring to the Orioles. I mean, I guess Tyler O'Neill is really the only other guy who is currently injured who could maybe take his spot. But I mean, at the same time, it's, you know, he's in this spot because some players have been underperforming in AAA and because some guys are just hurt. So yeah, very interesting story for sure though. But I kind of agree, unless somehow the Orioles come out next season, they're like, yeah, this guy's our starting right fielder, there's probably not too much of a reason to chase him.
I hope that's not the case. Not a knock on him too much, but I hope for a little better.
All right, moving on to pitching. Thanks to Nick for the Seti and Vergetti SP Roundup article referring to Spencer Arrigetti, who had a pretty decent start, but now is on the injured list, unfortunately. But we are going to talk about Ryan Pepiot instead of the Rays. Went up against Washington, got a win in this one. 5 innings, no runs, 1 hit, 3 walks, and 6 strikeouts. Yeah, pretty solid day for Pepiot. Of course, it's nice for any Rays pitcher to be pitching not in George Steinbrenner Field. Pepiot didn't have the greatest control of his arsenal, but still was able to work well with that heater and changeup. He's got the Guardians next and Chicago next, which really kind of makes him a good keep option if you have him on your fantasy team. It has been a pretty mixed bag for Pepiot this season. He's had okay ratios, 3.7 ERA, 1.15 whip, an okay strikeout rate, 24%. That is down from last season, though, I believe. It's not ace level stuff, but it's fine. And through 28 starts on the season, he does have 14 quality starts, which is pretty decent, I think, for any pitcher. That being said, next year, he goes back to pitching the Trop. Fingers crossed, right? That Tampa Bay figures everything out. But he should be in a more pitcher-friendly spot next year. Is he kind of worth looking in drafts as like potentially an SP3, or even if he's in a newer park, or not new park, an old park, I should say, is he kind of stuck as like a decent SP4, SP5 kind of guy, but nothing more than that?
Yeah, he's currently my favorite pitcher right now because he's thrown 3 scoreless innings and he's lowered my whip from 1.98 to 1.7. So I'm all aboard the Ryan Pepiot train. But no, seriously, it's been a solid season. Like you said, not spectacular. I do think I might be targeting him and a lot of other Rays pitchers pretty aggressively next year if they get back in the trop. It does seem like Tampa and Steinbrenner Field are having a lot of problems. You know, the pitch movement is a little bit inconsistent because of wind, and obviously it's a little bit of a smaller park. So I think that it's not like they're going from a hitter-friendly field to a neutral field. Like, Tropicana Field is known for being pretty pitcher-friendly, especially for Rays pitchers, so I do think that context change could be pretty big for Pepiot and some of the other arms. I'm interested to see where kind of the price settles on him. I think if he's going maybe like pick 100 to like pick 120, I think I might be interested in that range. The volume is really good this year, which is nice. So he's kind of contributing across the board, but this is the first time that he's really pitched a full season. So maybe some slight durability concerns, but yeah, I do have a lot of interest in Pepiot. I have him in 2 out of my 3 teams this year, and he's been solid, so I don't see anything that would move him, you know, move me off of him for next year.
Yeah, even with the the volume concerns, because I was kind of looking at his numbers last season, which is obviously the year he got traded to the Rays for Tyler Glasnow. 130 innings over 26 starts this year, 158 innings over 28 starts. So, all things cast aside about like injury risk and yada, 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 like it seems like he could be on his way to like, a 170, 180 inning season this year and potentially be at that same mark next year. And that would be really solid. If this is a guy that you could kind of feel good about 30 starts next year. I do like the aspect of maybe people just look at his stats and just say like, oh, wow, like a whip that was near 4 and an ERA that's like at 3.7 and a whip that's, not great, but not bad. Maybe that's worth waiting on, especially with the strikeout rate going down a little bit. But yeah, if they do go back to the trop, I do think a lot of Rays pitchers become more viable. Not that they're not viable now, but they just become a lot more interesting.
Yeah. Shane Baz is going to be a tough one. I don't think that he's going to be free by any means because people are interested in him, but I think, yeah, I could see it. I could see him kind of breaking through next year, even though it's been a really ugly 2025.
Yeah, we're going to talk about Boz in a little bit, and I have stuff to say. So, that wraps it up for Saturday.
Yeah, going to Sunday, August 31st, Duran around the bases was Johnny Gordon's hitter recap for Jaron Duran. I'm going to talk about another premium bat, though, William Contreras, catcher for the Brewers. He was 2-for-5 with a home run, a run, and 3 RBI. And he's really turned it on in the second half of the season, trying to remind fantasy managers why he was kind of the clear number one catcher off the board in draft season. He's up to 17 home runs, which isn't a remarkable total, but they've come in bunches lately, 11 in his last 31 games as of the 31st. And hopefully you held him long enough to reap the benefits. And the Brewers have really been on a roll, and Contreras' offensive surge seems to be a really big part of that. So after the strong second half, how much do you feel like Contreras' stock really falls after he was the, kind of the clear catcher one in 2025 drafts?
Yeah, I mean, obviously Cal Raleigh is going to jump him next year, right? There's no question about that. I don't really know who else is kind of competing with him for that spot, though, of number two. I mean, I'm just kind of looking at this list. Like, Hunter Goodman, like, do we really believe in a catcher from Colorado to kind of maintain the run that he's been on this season? I think, like, Contreras is kind of a clear second. Like, I would argue Shea Langeliers should be in that conversation as well, but Contreras, I think, just he's going to be the number two catcher, I think. Like, unless there's like some random Shea Helium that comes by, he probably ends up getting picked as number three, and then those would round out my top three catchers right now.
Yeah, I think I'm with you. Raleigh definitely the far and away number one. Contreras is, it's kind of a volume play, so I could see him slipping because like the average and the power aren't crazy, but he's in the lineup almost every single day. Like, he's on pace to play 150 to 155 games. So that really stands out at the catcher position. And he's actually, it looks like number two right now, I think, on Fangraphs player rater among catchers so far this year. Actually, number three, sorry, Hunter Goodman's number two, looks like. So even with this quote-unquote disappointing season, it's still been really strong. So I think he'll be going, you know, still pretty comfortably inside the top 100 and a little higher in, you know, like NFBC two catcher formats.
Yeah, and I mean, there isn't really too much regression, positive regression, I guess, for him. I mean, the average could be 10 points higher, meeting his career average at 273. He's batting 261 right now. He's kind of always been in this, like, around 20 homers per season sort of guy. You know, going back to 2022, 20, 17, 23, now 17, right? So it's like he literally hits an average of, like, 20 homers per season. And then we'll see how this year goes. So it's not numbers that wow you, but, like, for the catcher position, you know, you could definitely do worse than that. So, even though maybe some guys have a little bit more power than him, like Shaylen Galeers, for example, I think what he brings in terms of four categories is still really good.
Yeah, and I think that he's a lot of people I know in shallow one catcher leagues recommend just like kind of punting catcher and just taking it late to focus on other positions, which I think is valid. So I think, you know, Contreras isn't so good anymore that he's worth not punting catcher. I think it's really only Cal Raleigh who kind of fits that description at this point, but if he just kind of slides down and down your board, I think he's a really nice high floor option.
Yeah, I think I was just seeing he had a ADP of 27 in FBC. Oof. He's not going to be there this year. No. That's not happening. But, 25. It's crazy. Wow. He was going at the end of second rounds. So he's not going there, clearly. But if he's like, let's just say going... Yiner Diaz was going in the end of the fifth round this year, right? If Contreras is going at the end of the fifth round next year, is that someone you're buying in on?
Yeah, I think I would be open to it. I like to get definitely at least one catcher in like the first 8 to 10 rounds. So I think that he would definitely be on my list. I think the average will hopefully bounce back a little bit. I think that's one of the reasons why he was a big target at the position is because it's so hard to find good average there.
Yeah.
So on the pitching side, a Sandy Dollar bid was Nick's SP Ronda for Sandy Alcantara, who's putting together a pretty nice end of the season after a really rough, you know, like first two thirds of the year. But I'm talking about a guy who's been pretty much rock solid all season. One of my favorite pitchers, honestly, Joe Ryan of the Twins. He was against the Padres at home in this one and did get the win. 7 scoreless innings, 5 hits, 1 walk, 8 strikeouts, 17 whiffs, 35% CSW on 104 pitches. So full workload here for Ryan. Complete ace is going to ace performance. And he was sitting 94.8 on the four-seamer with a 1.9 height-adjusted vertical approach angle, 15 whiffs on 56 fastballs thrown. Joe Ryan's kind of like an analytical darling, a guy whose fastball shape is just kind of picture-perfect. He might have the best fastball in the league of any starting pitcher, honestly. It's such a reliable offering for him a year in and year out. And he's been incredible. Like I said, he's got about a 3.1 ERA and a 0.97 whip, which is really his best fantasy category. And is he like, where do you rank him in terms of second tier starting pitcher options? Because we have Crochet, Skeens, and Scooble, right? They've separated themselves. Wheeler was in that category and now he's unfortunately hurt. So it's kind of the big three now. And then after that, you know, where does Ryan rank in terms of the second tier options? We got guys like Hunter Brown, Jacob DeGrom, Brian Wu, Max Fried. Like, is he in the middle of that pack for you? Is he at the top of the heap? What do you think?
I'm pretty obvious about how I feel about the Twins next year. It's going to be rough for Ryan in any sort of wins league, but he's going to be great in the other three starting pitcher categories for sure. If you're in a quality start league, obviously he would be top five guy there. You know, in the names that you're talking about there, you know, I think Hunter Brown, there's been a lot of helium behind him and for good reason. Like, he's been really good. DeGrom somehow has turned it around this season. I mean, turnaround is maybe a weird term for him. He's just been healthy and good. And I mean, I do like all these other guys that you're kind of talking about. You know, Brian Wu, obviously, he's kind of in a similar career trajectory, I guess you could say, where it's like, you know, young guy breaking out. You know, he's kind of like who Joe Ryan was like two seasons ago, sort of. Yeah, I mean, would I put him at the top of that list? I don't know if I put him number one in that second tier, but he's definitely at the top half right now, just because of how consistent he is. And even on a bad, you know, Twins team, he's able to still, you know, get the occasional win here and there. So, Yeah, I think to me the funny thing about his fastball being great is just the fact that it's like a low velocity fastball. It's you know, it's nowhere like these 98, 99 mile an hour guys are just throwing heat, but he makes it work and he throws that pitch so often that I'm surprised that no one's figured it out yet.
Yeah, it's just a thing. I think, you know, hitters are so, they've been seeing thousands of pitches in their lives and their eyes are basically just lying to them. It's really impressive. Yeah, I love Joe Ryan. I think I agree. He's not at the top of the heap in that group. This is kind of his first season having an objectively like good, shallow fantasy league ERA. Like he's always been a great whip guy, strikeouts, that type of thing. But his best ERA before this year was 3.55. So this is kind of a next level he's reaching here. So maybe a little regression in that department next year. And I think that combined with the team context has him maybe not a top five SP for me, but I don't think he's really far off.
Yeah. And I mean, I think he used to, well, still does kind of a little bit. But this year he's toned down his home run issue. Not like a ton. Two seasons ago was at 1.78, which is like really high. Last year, 1.27, this year, 1.1. So it's a little bit lower, which maybe speaks to a little bit how that ERA has gone down a little, has gone down some. Strikeout rate's kind of consistently in like the 28%. So to me, like, yeah, if that home run rate can continue to go down a little bit, and the control is just impeccable as ever, right? Like, yeah, that to me, he's an easy top 10 pitcher. I think top five is maybe where you start having those conversations.
Yeah. Yeah. I hope I can get some more shares next year because I know it's going to be expensive.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Moving on to Monday. Thanks to Christian Ottoman for the Jamai Sequoia hitter recap article referring to Jamai Jones of the Brewers, I believe, who had a homer on Monday. But we are going to talk about another guy, Juan Soto, who has just been on an absolute tear in the last month. 2-for-3 with a triple, a homer, 2 runs, 6 RBIs, and 2 walks on Monday. Of course, Soto's had his up and downs this season, but a lot of that due to the fact that he's having a very Mike Trout-esque season with a ton of solo homers. But here we are in September, and at the end of the day, he still has a really awesome season right now. There is a little bit of a dip in ratios and counting stats for Soto this year. His average and his OBP are down a little bit compared to his career numbers. But I guess the big number is just the fact that he has 27 stolen bases this year, which is double what he's had any other season, which is kind of crazy. And the homers, everyone who thought that the 41 homers last year was a little bit of an aberration, well, Soto was like, nope, I really do have that power. He's got 37 so far this year, so I would not be surprised to see him, you know, over kind of set a new career high for himself as well in homers. So now that he basically is just a 5-category guy, I mean, assuming these stolen bases stick, which, you know, this 1 year could be the weird year, but hey, it's not a money year for him anymore. So maybe this is the real him in terms of stealing bases. Is he in contention for the number one pick next season in drafts, or does Judge and Shohei still have a chokehold on that spot?
Yeah, I don't think I can quite get there. Obviously, it's been an awesome season, and I think that there should just be a rule in like fantasy and I guess baseball. Like, you can't say anything bad about Juan Soto's offense for like the first 6 weeks of the season. Like, until he shows that he's not an elite hitter, like, why are we questioning it? You know, he's going to do it every year. But yeah, from a fantasy perspective, it's a little different. I think Judge and Ohtani kind of have the top two pretty much locked up. I think maybe in an OBP league, you can start considering him at 3. Or like, let's say Judge gets surgery right on his elbow because he's dealing with that. Then you can maybe think about him at 2 in OBP league. But I think in a standard format, probably like 4 is maybe where I first start looking at him. I think I'd probably still prefer like Bobby Witt over him. But I mean, it's been a hell of a season. So it's cool. It's going to be cool to see if he can have a good playoffs for the Mets and then just kind of keep it going into next year. Yeah, like I said, he's elite until he shows us otherwise. And he's just on a great trajectory.
Yeah, there's truly great numbers from him. And it's just weird that like the one place that he's like kind of not that great right now is average, which is like, I mean, obviously OBP is his calling card, but you know, if your OBP is good, that means your average is also pretty decent as well. And it's at 260 right now, which is 20 points below his career average. So it's kind of funny how that's the one spot that he's not doing super hot right now.
Yeah. Making up for it with the speed.
Yes. All right. Moving on to pitchers. Thanks to Nick for the difficult choice. Morales is SP roundup article, but we're going to talk about Shane Baz. of the Rays, who kind of teased it a little bit earlier, got the win in Seattle. Six innings, no one runs, five hits, two walks, and six strikeouts. It's pretty refreshing to see Boz locate his curveball down to right-hand batters for the first time in a while, allowing him to basically reduce that four-seamer usage to just 18% to right-hand batters. But he elevated it consistently to lefties, did not get a single hit allowed on that fastball against lefties. Cutter still could be decent. Nick wants it to kind of be a little bit more consistent, just floats a little bit too much for him. Changeup needs to be a little bit located a little bit better as well, down and away. He sat 98 miles an hour in this game, which is over a tick from where we usually see his career, his season average at 96, 97 mile an hour. Curve was also up in velocity this as well. Cutter was also up in velocity. So just kind of a weird start for Boz, I guess. Maybe seeing some end of season magic for him. His changeup was actually at the same velocity, which is kind of funny. But yeah, Boz has had an up and down season. Obviously, the prospect pedigree for him was great, but I think he's really, he has not lived up to that this year. 4.98 ERA. That number itself is kind of like a lot to describe how the season has been going for Boz. Obviously, it's, you can't use one number to describe the entire season. But pretty consistently, he just has not been able to, you know, do that much on in terms of like stopping runs. He's got a 1.56 homer per nine. Not great. The whip's 1.34. He still somehow managed to get 11 quality starts on the season through 27. So I don't know. For me, Boz, he's 26 years old, so he's kind of reaching, you know, the prime, so to speak, of him in terms of pitching. The strikeout rate's like only at 24%. I don't know. Is Boz someone that you're even bothering to look at in drafts right now? I mean, obviously, we talked about Tampa Bay pitchers moving to the Trop next year. It's going to be better for them. But Boz has just been so volatile this season that I don't know if I can trust him in drafts next year.
Yeah, I think it's the type of thing that you don't want to invest too high of a pick. But like in deeper leagues, I think he's going to be a guy that gets pushed up the board because at least one person in your draft room is going to be in on him. Especially if they end up back in the Trop. The home road splits for him are really stark this year. The strikeout minus walk, there's like almost no difference. They're both at 15-16%, but the home runs, it's a crazy split. He's 2.24 homers per nine at home and 0.93 on the road. So seems like the long ball is going to be a problem for him regardless, but clearly the home number is just kind of a little bit of an aberration there. So I think if they're back in the Trop, it's going to be interesting. I think I will have some interest. I don't know if I'm going to be willing to really push him up my board like super far ahead of ADP, but I think if I see him out there and looking for a kind of a high ceiling starting option, I would go for him. I'll definitely be seeing, you know, how his velo tracks the rest of the season and then in spring training next year. Like if he's hit 98, I mean that makes a big difference.
Yeah, and of course the frustrating thing with him is that he just has these gems every so often that you just kind of look at, you're like, man, this guy is an absolute ace, and then he just follows it up with some duds here and there. Obviously this game was pretty solid. Six innings, six strikeouts, no one runs. Love to see that. Yeah, he just is somewhat inconsistent, and it doesn't really – he's a little matchup agnostic too, right? Like, it doesn't matter if it's a good team or a bad team. He might have a great start. He might not have a great start. So it's a little rough. But, yeah, hopefully moving to the Trop next year maybe smooths things out for him.
Yeah, fingers crossed. So Tuesday the 2nd on the hitter side, Jazz Festival with Scott McDermott's hitter roundup for Jazz Chisholm. I'm going to talk about someone who's been even better than Jazz, another AL East bat. That's George Springer of the Blue Jays, outfield slash DH. He was 3-for-4, two home runs, three runs, three RBIs, and a walk. That's 2 months in a row where Springer has finished with above and 1,000 OPS, and it's looking like he's got a decent chance to do that in September, too. He's off to a hot start. I had another home run yesterday, so that's three in the last 2 days. And it was a decent but not incredible first 60 games. And he's just kind of vaulted himself into like top 20 territory on the player radar since then. He's had 19 home runs since July 1st, even though he missed a couple weeks with a concussion. So looking like kind of one of the biggest league winners out there, given his 234 ADP and maybe the fantasy MVP. I mean, I have him in a league and I clicked on his name and I saw that he was ranked 9th in my league. And I was just like, holy cow. Like I knew he was incredible, but I didn't realize it was that good. So it's interesting, right? Because Springer's not getting any younger. I think he's 35, 36 now. really bad season last year, fantastic season this year. You know, what are we supposed to do in drafts next year with a guy like George Springer?
Yeah, I had the opportunity to trade for Springer in a dynasty league this year, and I was like, I'm not trading for a 36-year-old outfielder dynasty. Are you crazy? And I felt pretty validated in that in May and June when he just, like, wasn't that good. I mean, he still had 9 homers in 2 months, which is, you know, pretty decent for a guy who, you know, you kind of expect 30 in a good year, 30 homer power. But the average was horrendous. And then he's just been an absolute tear since pretty much since probably mid-June is probably accurate. But yeah, I don't know. He's 37 next year. Toronto, I guess, is like a pretty solid team still. You know, they locked up Vlad. So clearly, and Santander, I guess. So, you know, there's a lot of players coming back next year for that team. And I don't know. It feels wrong to say that this year is like a complete aberration. But at the same time, it's like, he's 36, you know, like the last couple seasons have not been, you know, amazing. They've been decent, but they haven't been like this level of incredibility. So I would probably expect some level of regression back to the mean for him, but I don't think that means that like he's not on teams next year. You know, I think he's still a pretty decent outfielder too, maybe. You know, we talked about Nimmo, you know, like maybe Springer's like a discount Nimmo. Maybe that's where he kind of ends up being.
Yeah. I'll be interested to see how kind of the price settles between those two guys. Nimmo has been like more consistent, but Springer obviously is showing a higher ceiling. So it'll be tough to kind of pick between them or see where the price settles. It is interesting because Springer, it's not like he's just getting lucky and like he's running some crazy BABIP. Like he has a high BABIP, but he's mashing the ball, right? His barrel rate's above the 90th percentile. His exit velocity on fly balls is in the 82nd percentile. He's pulling the ball in the air slightly above average. Like he's doing what, you know, the changes that need to be made to hit for a lot more power. And he's obviously seeing incredible results. So the skills, I'm sure, are going to erode a little bit next year. It's unreasonable to expect this to continue. But yeah, I mean, he's just been incredible. And I think that in maybe casual leagues, people might push him too far up the draft board because they're going to see his insane stats from last year and kind of buy too much into it. But maybe in, you know, sharper draft rooms where they kind of discount career years a little bit, you might be able to get a decent price.
I will say 331 BABIP is pretty high.
Yeah, but when you hit the ball that hard, you know.
That's true. Yeah, I mean, like, yeah, there are changes to why this is happening. So, yeah, there's that. Although expecting a 37-year-old to continue hitting the ball hard. I mean, I guess he's doing this as an age 36 season, so I shouldn't discriminate, right? Like, he's doing this. He's only going to be a year older next year. It's not like he's all of a sudden, like, losing all this muscle mass. So, yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting. Yeah, him and Nimmo, I think, are very interesting candidates because both those guys are, like, pretty solid five-category guys. Although maybe Nimmo not as much in the stolen base. Well, I guess he is, right? They're both are really solid like five category guys. So yeah, with that being said, you know, Springer and Nimmo, those are two, that's going to be a very interesting question, in next year's drafts.
Yeah, absolutely. On the pitching side, we're going to talk about Framber Valdez. Ferris Farrow was Nick's SP roundup, which is Mitch Ferris debuting pitcher for the Angels, but he's kind of off our radar for fantasy still after a decent debut. I was talking about Valdez, who got the Yankees and took the loss with a really tough outing. 5 innings, 6 earned runs, 8 hits, 1 walk, and 8 strikeouts. 13 whiffs, 35% CSW on 96 pitches. So I at least gave you the strikeouts there, but that's about it. There was an incident in the game where it looked like he intentionally crossed up his catcher and drilled him with a fastball after not liking a pitch call that led to a grand slam. They kind of played it off. Seems like he probably was guilty of it, but I'm more going to talk about kind of the step back that Valdez has taken this year, at least from a fantasy perspective. He was incredible last year at 15 wins, 2.91 ERA, 1.11 whip. And this year, he's had a couple of tough outings lately and that have really kind of cut into the value he's provided. He's had 170 innings, which is great, but 3.40 ERA and a 1.20 whip, which is right in line with his career. And that's always been the problem with Valdez. So do we feel like last year was kind of a little bit misleading in terms of him offering that ace level upside and he settles more as a SP2-3 in our, you know, on our teams?
I mean, it might not even just be the last year. I would argue the first half of the season has been a little bit of an aberration. I was trying to look up his splits, but Fangraphs is being a little weird right now. Okay, he, in the first half of the season, 1.12 whip. Second half of the season, 1.41 whip, right? It's a difference of 120 innings versus 40 innings, so small sample size, yada, 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 whatever. 9.3 K per 9, 7.63 K per 9, 17% strikeout minus walk rate, 12% strikeout minus walk rate. So, like, even the first half of the season, he was incredible, and we've really started seeing these blow-ups, like, kind of after August, I think, is maybe the accurate thing to say for Valdez. So, I don't know. To me, is he the pitcher from last year? Probably not. Is what he's doing in the last month Framber Valdez as well for next year? Probably not as well, right? So, to answer, I guess, the answer to the question, I think he's still a little bit of a premium SP2 to me. The racials are always going to be kind of an issue with him, right? I don't think you should expect the racials he had last year to continue this year. But could you live with a 3.4 ERA and a 1.15 whip for like an SP2? I think you can. And so, you know, that's kind of where I view him as, like a guy who, yeah, probably is like a top 30 pitcher. And that's kind of where I see him.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm mostly with you. I think I tend to lean away from the higher whip guys because I feel like they get a little overdrafted and lean more into guys like Joe Ryan who have really good whips and maybe not great ERAs. But yeah, I don't think this is any indication that he's lost it or, you know, has fallen off. I think he's kind of just regressing to more of what his mean is as a player. You know, his season-long ratios right now are super similar to his career numbers. So I think it was just a little bit of an expected step back, although it is unfortunate, you know, how quickly things have kind of reversed course for him at a time when a lot of managers, you know, are really hoping for ace level performance from him.
Yeah, definitely. Like, it's, I mean, you just look at his game log and it's like, it's almost pristine from beginning of the season to basically end of July, actually, I should say. And since July, since the end of July, he's had one quality start. That's it. He has 18 on the season, and he's had one quality start in the last, like, month of pitching, which kind of screams to, like, how bad August has been for Framber.
Yeah, that's crazy for a guy like him who seems to just mow through a lot of lineups.
Yeah, I mean, he's got 18 on the season, which is, like, a really good number, but yeah. he literally front-loaded all of that from April to the end of July. So,
jeez.
Yeah. All right, well, moving on to Wednesday, thanks to Kyle Stanzel for the Matthew Mile Chapman hitter recap article. We're going to talk about another Toronto Blue Jays outfielder, Dalton Varsho, 3-for-5 with a homer, 2 runs, and 2 RBI on Wednesday. Do we need to talk about Varsho? I mean, it feels like he's been under the radar this entire season. He's got 18 homers and just 176 at-bats, mainly because he's just been injured for a good chunk of the season. He started the season on the injured list, came back, played a little bit, went back on the injured list. Now he's back and he's hitting homers. He's got a 369 ISO, which is obviously a very small sample size, 176 at-bats, but that's obviously a lot better than his career high of 207. Could he have gotten better than his career high homer number of 27 home runs if he was healthy the entire year? Maybe. But again, he's on a little bit of a heater. He only has one stolen base this year, right? That's kind of the knock on Varsho right now, that he just isn't a five category guy anymore. His 239 average just really is not something to get excited about at all. I would still love if he had catcher eligibility, but those days are far past behind Varsho. Still in the last month of the season, is he someone that might be worth picking up in the playoffs? And is he even on the radar right now for drafts next year?
Yeah, I would say yes to both. I mean, he's not qualified, right? He has way too few at-bats, but he has the most home runs per at-bat of any hitter if he was qualified, right? Like, more than Cal Raleigh, Shohei Ohtani, like Kyle Schwarber. Like, so he's made some some crazy power gains. He was kind of viewed as more of like a power speed guy, and now it seems like it's just almost all power. And he's kind of making the textbook trade power for contact approach. He's swinging and missing more than ever, especially in the zone. So the strikeouts are up along with that. So I'm a little skeptical of how sustainable the approach is, but it's clear that he's tapped into a little bit extra power. It seems like that's going to lower the batting average expectation. But when the power is this prolific, I think you're willing to take that. And the Jays offense, like we said, is really strong. So I think he's a guy that's worth targeting. He's also pulling the ball in the air a ton, so that's allowing him to tap into the power. He's available in one of my leagues, and I would have added him by now if I didn't have a ads limit where like I'm trying to save those ads for starting pitchers. But yeah, I think that he's like almost a must roster at this point for the rest of the season.
Yeah, just some interesting stats. Like I mentioned, a 239 average. He's not actually like a really good average hitter. His career is like 226. So he's actually hitting above his belt right now. But nearly 30% strikeout rate. His career average is 25%. He's barreling the ball right now at 18.7%, which is insane. But his hard contact rate, which is, you know, hard hits over total plate appearances. So it's more about, it's less about how many percentage of your batted balls are hard hits, more about your plate appearances that end up in a hard hit. 27%, so not great. Not great there, which is kind of speaking to what you're talking about, sacrificing contact for power. And even though he has a higher average right now, he is striking out a lot more than he was in previous seasons. And so, yeah, interesting to see if that strategy kind of continues until next year. He kind of becomes a three-category guy, which, you know, it's a pretty serviceable outfielder three, I think. Those are pretty decent numbers if you can get good homers, runs, and RBI from that position.
Yeah, the fact that I'm thinking about adding him for Ian Happ or Mike Trout tells you a little bit about how they've struggled. Those two guys have struggled a little bit this year, but it tells you a lot more about just how incredible Varsho has been like the last 6 weeks.
Yeah. All right, moving on to pitchers. Thanks to Nick for the fatal Yuri SP roundup article, of course, referring to Yuri Perez's awful start against the Nationals, which we talked about. But no, we're going to talk about a pitcher who's actually turned around his season in Zach Gallen of the Diamondbacks, getting the win against Texas. 6 innings, no runs, 4 hits, 1 walk, and 5 strikeouts. We talked about Gallen a couple episodes ago, and I think we weren't ready to buy in just yet. Looks like we should have bought in because he's been on fire. This is his 4th straight quality start, his 6th in his last 7 starts. He was hitting 93.6 miles an hour in this one, which is kind of around actually kind of where he's been for the consistent part of the second half of the season, but it's better than what he was in the first half of the season. He was using his sliders against righties, which was really effective. He was going up against a Texas offense that frankly just isn't very good, but doesn't matter. This was a great showing for him. He gets the Giants now 2 times in a row, which is going to be a really good matchup. We've, you know, talked about how the Giants offense just is not very good this year. I mean, we should have believed in Zach probably 3 starts ago, but now at this point, do we believe that Zach is back for the rest of the year?
Yeah, I mean, with the softer matchups against the Giants, sure, I'll go for it. It would be a tough decision for me if it was more kind of middle of the road or tougher matchups. But yeah, I think it's nice to see him finish the year strong, and at least, you know, he's going to be a free agent, right? So every start kind of matters for him at this point in terms of boosting his value. But I think, I don't know, I'm thinking of him like versus Shane Boz. Like, I feel like, I don't know, maybe I'd rather have Shane Boz next year. It depends on where Gallen ends up. If he ends up in a really pitcher-friendly park or with a great defense, that might change my mind. But I think Gallen's kind of on a downward trajectory, whereas Boz is still pretty early in his career. Can't say he's on an upward trajectory. That would be accurate, but a little bit more promising. Yeah, Gallen and Sandy, it's like two guys who have been terrible all year. It's nice to see them finish the season well, but it kind of strikes me as more of like a dead cat bounce. I know that's kind of a crude term, but like these two guys who have been really good at points in their career, it's just hard to believe that they would be as terrible as they've been for an entire season. So it's not shocking to see them, you know, bounce back. But I mean, 1 earned run over his last 18 innings is really impressive. So, you know, that's good to see.
Yeah, I mean, looking at his opponents, it's not exactly murderer's row. It was Texas, the Dodgers right before this, so decent offense there, but not great. Cincinnati at home, so obviously another pretty good start. Cleveland, Texas again, and then Colorado. So
yeah, that's pretty nice.
Yeah, pretty decent soft schedule there. Yeah. The start before that was at Oakland, which actually is kind of impressive that he was able to escape that one with not that much. Not that much pain. So, he has not been going against really tough matchups this season, or I guess in this stretch. So still impressive nonetheless that he's been turned around, but there is context there as well. All right, that wraps it up for the player performances. We are going to move on to streamers because you still need to stream in the playoffs. In fact, I would argue you probably need to stream more because sometimes you have these bad starts like Yuri Perez going 4 innings and 7 runs, and you need some other pitcher to bring that number down. So, who do we got for streamers for the next week?
Yeah, you'd hope as, you know, the weather cools off a little bit, streaming will get a little easier, but that definitely hasn't happened yet. There's still been a lot of landmines out there. But yeah, just to recap, 2 weeks ago, just one guy had another start since our last show. That was Michael McGreevy, and it was a good one. He got a win, 6 innings, 1 run, no strikeouts, which is just, you know, kind of classic Cardinals, Michael McGreevy outing, 1.17 whip, but you take that. And then last week we talked a little bit in kind of an extended segment, but we recommended Colin Rea and Clayton Kershaw to some extent. And they both struggled a little bit. Rea, 4 innings, 3 earned. Kershaw, 5 innings, 4 earned. And this week I feel pretty good about the options. I think it's a good landscape. I tried to go with a couple of different league depth options. The first two are kind of almost must-ads if they're out there. Wouldn't expect them to be in most active leagues, though. First one's Jose Quintana, Brewers. He gets a two-step at Texas, which is a great place to pitch and not a great offense right now, and home against St. Louis. So two great matchups right there. Brewers are obviously a great team. Quintana's a great wins and ERA guy, but hopefully he can also get, you know, maybe 10 strikeouts and a decent whip. Next one, Ryan Berger, Royals. He's 39% Yahoo, 32% CBS. And Quintana, just going back to him, is 34% Yahoo, 59% CBS. But for Berger, he gets a two-step as well. A little bit more challenging at Cleveland. The first one is great, but then at Philly for the second one. So if you can just target that Cleveland one, I'd be cool with that. That would probably be the preference. Not as good of a wins candidate since it's the Royals instead of the Brewers, but he's been really solid this year. He's had good ratios across the board, so worth adding for sure. And then on the deeper side, one's an IL stash, Ryan Weathers. Marlins, 7% Yahoo, 22% CBS. His last rehab start is today, like we talked about earlier. And he should be almost fully built up in his return start, which looks like it's going to be midweek against the Nationals, which is a weaker offense, and especially against lefties. So I think that's a great play. And then Tyler Wells, who just came back, had a good outing against the Padres in his season debut. He's super low rostered, 3% Yahoo, 5% CBS. And I wouldn't be recommending him in most matchups, but at home against Pittsburgh, I think is a really good wins play. Quality start, maybe if he's efficient, but I think he's probably going to be a little bit limited. But yeah, he's not a high ceiling option because he doesn't get a ton of strikeouts and isn't going to go deep, but should be a good ratios play against a weak Pirates offense that's even worse on the road.
Yeah, I would say the one thing, one observation, Berger, if you have a quality star league, he's probably a no-go. Well, not that he's a no-go there. He's just less valuable there because he's got a pretty quick hook. The Royals are pretty quick to get him out of a game if they see him start struggling. And yeah, Weathers, I think that's one of those really decent pickups if you can manage it, just because there was a lot of helium around him at the beginning of the season. I would expect that those same skills that were there in spring training, we saw some of that in his, I guess, was it two starts? Maybe?
Maybe three.
I would not expect any of that to be missing. And of course, you know, Miami Pitching Factory, they've been able to tinker with some of his stuff this season. Yeah, love him against the Nationals. I think that's almost a must start for me.
Yeah, it looks like he finished up 4 2/3 scoreless in the start, 68 pitches. So probably going to be more like 80, unfortunately, not 90 in his first start. Velo is down about a tick, but still, you know, sitting 96. So I think it's a good play.
Well, that is it for this episode. Again, you can find us on This Week PL on Twitter. Send us your comments and questions at thisweekplpod@gmail.com. You can find myself on Twitter at TheJohnCa and Patrick at PFitzgerald_99. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe to the Pitchless Podcast feed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever else you listen to your podcasts, and leave a 5-star review if you enjoy the show. Lastly, sign up for Pitchless Pro. By doing so, you can join us in the Pitchless Discord, get advice from all the fantasy experts and writers over there. Even though football season is starting today, there is still plenty of baseball talk going on, so definitely join the Discord. Talk about baseball year-round. Even when playoffs are over, the World Series are over, we're still talking baseball. So definitely join the community there. But that is all for this week. We'll be back next week with another episode of This Week in Fantasy Baseball. For Patrick, I'm John, and you'll see you in the next one. Later, everyone.